It's Tuesday, July 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Washington reacts as Iran breaches limits set in the 2015 nuclear deal with world powers.
Under President Donald Trump, America will never allow Iran to obtain a nuclear weapon.
Also, after several weeks of controversy and protests, Hong Kong's leader Carrie Lam declares an extradition bill dead. And a look at press freedom in Turkey after a controversial report. All these stories and more are ahead on today's International Edition. Top U.S. officials say Iran should not test America's patience as the Islamic Republic creates nuclear material in quantities and purity above limits set in the 2015 international nuclear deal. The reaction came as the International Atomic Energy Inspectors verified that Iran breached the limits set in the nuclear deal aimed at restraining Tehran's nuclear weapons development. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from Washington.
Iran says it will violate the 2015 Iran nuclear accord after the U.S. withdrew from it last year. That sparked a stern warning from Vice President Mike Pence.
Iran should not confuse American restraint with a lack of American resolve. We hope for the best, but the United States of America and our military are prepared to protect our interests and protect our personnel and our citizens in the region. We will continue to oppose Iran's malign influence. We will continue to bring pressure on their economy. And under President Donald Trump, America will never allow Iran to obtain a nuclear weapon.
National Security Advisor John Bolton had a similar warning to Tehran.
We will continue to increase the pressure on the Iranian regime until it abandons its nuclear weapons program and ends its violent activities across the Middle East, including conducting and supporting terrorism around the world.
A top Iranian army chief said Monday his country is not looking for war with any country. But Iran is calling on other signatories to the Iran nuclear deal to find a way around the crippling U.S. economic sanctions, including on crucial oil exports. The European Union and Russia expressed concern about Iran's uranium enrichment action. But Russia also blamed the U.S. for withdrawing from the nuclear deal last year. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
AP correspondent John Gambrell reports Iranian media are quoting the country's nuclear agency spokesman as saying Tehran is now enriching uranium at 4.5%. But Iranian leaders could make changes if world powers support the 2015 nuclear deal.
The reason the international community is so concerned right now is because Iran has both increased its enrichment and broken through a 300-kilogram stockpile limit that it also had on its low-enriched uranium. That may not sound like a big number, but the reason why the authorities had sought the 3.67% is because it's a low enough number that it can power nuclear power plants and be used for other peaceful purposes, but it doesn't start to edge up towards weapons-grade levels of 90%. Nuclear non-proliferation experts say that those two things together can actually narrow the one-year window that Iran has before it would have enough visible material to potentially make a nuclear weapon. One thing about the stockpile and the enrichment limits are they both can be easily brought back down, and that's what Iran is trying to show the West, that it can back down, go back to the deal if they get the terms that they want. But given the maximum pressure campaign that we're seeing from the United States right now, the deal really does look in jeopardy.
That was AP correspondent John Gambrell. The European Union on Tuesday urged Iran to reverse its scaled-up uranium enrichment that breaches the 2015 deal. Iran has said it will boost its uranium enrichment in a few hours above a cap set by the deal, a move that could mean the resumption of all economic sanctions on Tehran. After several weeks of controversy and large, angry street protests, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam says the controversial legislation that would have allowed extraditions to mainland China is dead.
I reiterate here, there is no such plan. The bill is dead.
But Hong Kong protest leaders say they will continue their demonstrations. The AP's correspondent Charles de la Desma explains.
Hong Kong protesters are persisting in their demands for the bill to be formally withdrawn and a probe opened into heavy-handed tactics used by police against demonstrators. Protest leaders Jimmy Sham and Bonnie Lee Ung together say they can't find the word dead in any other laws in Hong Kong or in any legal proceedings. They add that Chief Executive Carrie Lam is being hypercritical in claiming to have met demonstrators' demands without actually speaking to them directly, and that details on future protest actions will be announced in due course. I'm Charles de la Desma.
The former British colony was granted special autonomy for 50 years after it returned to Chinese sovereignty in 1997, but many in Hong Kong are concerned that China is slowly encroaching on those rights and tightening its grip on the territory. The extradition debate has seen the government unwittingly reignite Hong Kong's protest movement and calls for the direct election of its leader 5 years after the 2014 so-called Umbrella Movement democracy protests came to an end. A new report by the International Commission of Jurists finds the rule of law in Venezuela has collapsed and that the government must act to restore democratic institutions. Lisa Schlein reports from ICJ headquarters in Geneva.
Opposition legislators won 113 seats in the National Assembly, Venezuela's 165-member parliament, in 2015. 2 years ago, President Nicolas Maduro installed a National Constituent Assembly by executive decree, made up of his supporters. The International Commission of Jurists claims this body is having a devastating effect on the rule of law in the country. The Constituent Assembly supposedly was created to draft a new constitution. However, ICJ Secretary General Sam Zarifi says Maduro, by his actions, has usurped the authority of the legislative branch of government and stripped the judiciary of its independence.
The conclusion of our report is that the NCA, the National Constituent Assembly, was improperly created without popular endorsement in blatant violation of the Venezuelan Constitution. And after that, it has acted in an unchecked manner and beyond the rule of law.
Zarifi says the NCA has widely abused its purported functions. He says it has been doing everything except discussing the establishment of a new constitution. He says it has improperly taken over the legislative authority normally delegated to parliament. He notes the NCA has been operating outside of any existing legal framework.
That has resulted in a system of undermining and eroding the proper checks and balances provided by the parliament that has essentially ended the separation of powers in the country and has at this point resulted in the near total collapse of the rule of law in Venezuela.
Zarifi says the NCA has passed a number of electoral laws, fired the Attorney General without cause, and stripped members of the elected Legislative Assembly of their immunity. The ICJ reports intimidation and threats against members of Parliament are having a poisonous impact on the legislative process. It says opposition members are targeted by the government for exercising their freedom of expression and assembly. As a consequence of this intimidation, it notes 22 parliamentarians have fled into exile, while 4 currently are in prison. Venezuela is caught in an economic crisis and a political standoff between the Maduro government and National Assembly leader Juan Guaido, who has declared himself president. He is backed by the United States and dozens of other countries. Millions of Venezuelans have fled their country because of the ongoing political crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Here are some other major stories from around the globe. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, has condemned the conditions of detention in which refugees and migrants are being held on the southern border of the United States. Jeffrey Epstein, a U.S. hedge fund billionaire with links to top politicians and celebrities, was charged Monday with running a sex trafficking ring that allegedly exploited dozens of underage girls. At the African Union Summit in Niger, the African Continental Free Trade Area was launched. It will be the world's largest free trade zone, a 55-nation block worth $3.4 trillion. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the VOAnews.com website and with our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers at the California Institute of Technology have discovered a near-Earth orbiting asteroid with the shortest year known for any asteroid in the solar system. Called 2019 LF6, this nearly 1 kilometer-wide rocky asteroid circles the Sun in an elliptical orbit over a 151-day period. The asteroid's orbit takes it from beyond Venus to closer to the Sun than Mercury. 2019 LF6 is known as an Altera asteroid, which are about 20 asteroids whose orbits are contained within Earth's orbit of the Sun. Though the 2019 LF6 is considered a near-Earth object, astronomers have determined that it is not considered potentially hazardous. The Caltech astronomers made their discovery with the Zwicky Transient Facility, a camera that was recently installed on a telescope at the Palomar Observatory near San Diego, California. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. A new report issued by a Turkish think tank with ties to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's ruling Justice and Development Party has publicly identified a number of reporters working in Turkey with international organizations, accusing them of bias against the government. The report released by the Foundation for Political, Economic, and Social Research, or SETA, named Turkish journalists currently working for Deutsche Welle, the BBC, Euronews, as well as the Voice of America, among others. Joining me in the studio to discuss the report and its implications is VOA Press Freedom editor Doug Bernard. Welcome, Doug.
Thanks for having me here.
So what can you tell us about this report?
Well, you know, for some time now, it has not been an easy thing to be a journalist in Turkey. The nation is replete with stories of journalists being harassed, newspapers or television stations, say, for example, being shut down temporarily, and as well as physical abuse. I mean, just last week I was reading about a Bloomberg reporter who was working on a story about a large state-owned Turkish bank. Mm-hmm. And out of the blue, as he was walking in a crowd, he got two police batons, one to the back of his neck and one to the head, which brought him down to the ground. So this kind of thing really does happen a lot. It does seem, however, that allies of President Erdogan are stepping up their game, or perhaps turning up the heat a little bit. You mentioned this report. It just recently came out by the group SETA, which has close political ties with Mr. Erdogan's AKP party. And they really did something that's not been done before.
So what did they do?
Well, they took five or six media organizations, VOA is one of them, BBC, Deutsche Welle, Sputnik, and Euronews are the others, and they started naming journalists specifically.
Almost creating like a blacklist or something like that?
Well, he did two things. One, they would go to that journalist's social media feeds and pull out what they call examples of bias against the government. Now, these go back to 2016, which is, of course, the year of the failed coup. But the journalists and the journalist organizations have said, look, this is cherry picking. This is blacklisting. You know, this is really unfair. But the group SETA, standing by the report, and if you read between the lines a little bit, it seems clear they're ready to not only keep it up, but maybe turn it up a little bit more.
What about journalistic organizations within Turkey? How are they responding to the report?
The Turkish Journalists Union has filed a lawsuit. They did that on Monday. And they're asking the prosecutors to you know, basically look into allegations that this is a violation of privacy. The report authors did not as you might call, docs the reporters. Here's, you know, their home office. Here's, you know, here's their phone number, et cetera, et cetera. But they came pretty darn close. And they even started drawing maps of where journalists are and headquarters and that kind of thing. So they're really, I mean, it's really a not so, it's really a naked attempt to try to intimidate journalists and remind them that if they don't mind their P's and Q's, they might just make things even worse for them.
And we should also note that according to Reporters Without Borders, the Press Freedom Index in that country ranks 157th out of 180 countries.
That's right. It's on a steady decline, and there's also, depending on how you count, either 135 or 143 Turkish journalists currently in jail, and that makes it the country with the highest number out of all the countries in the world, the country with the highest number of journalists currently in jail.
Doug Bernard is our VOA Press Freedom Editor. Thank you so much for stopping by the studio.
Thank you for having me.
A coroner in Australia's New South Wales state is investigating the drug-related deaths of six youths at a music festival in the country. The coroner is looking at ways to prevent future tragedies. Among them is a request by the bereaved families for the government to allow pill testing. Phil Mercer has more.
The inquest in Sydney follows a series of deaths at music festivals in Australia's most popular state, New South Wales. The coroner heard that one victim, 19-year-old Alex Ross King, took an unusually high amount of the drug MDMA, which is commonly known as ecstasy, before arriving at an event in Sydney because she was afraid of being caught with the drugs by the police. The young woman developed a body temperature of 41 degrees Celsius and had a rapid and irregular pulse. She died later following a heart attack. In December, 22-year-old Joshua Tam died after taking illicit drugs at the Lost Paradise Music Festival north of Sydney. His mother, Julie Tam, believes that had pill testing been allowed at the venue, he could still be alive.
It's more about the intervention that happens at the point of pill testing. It's about an intervention with health professionals who may have been able to speak with our son at that point. It's really about having a last-minute conversation that we as parents weren't there to have.
The New South Wales government has repeatedly stressed that testing illicit drugs at festivals would only encourage their use. While many doctors believe a simple check of their ingredients, including contaminants, would save lives. Pill testing is supported by the Royal Australasian College of Physicians and the Australian Medical Association. The coroner's inquest is focusing on the use of MDMA. When it's absorbed into a user's bloodstream, it releases various chemicals that can bring on confidence and euphoria, but it can also cause dehydration and heat stroke. Those taking a large or particularly potent batch can suffer paranoia, aggression, or even death. The government has estimated that more than 40% of Australians aged over 14 years have used an illicit drug at least once in their lifetime. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States have also educated prominent Africans, like the founding presidents of Nigeria, Ghana, and Malawi. The role of historically black colleges and universities on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. President Donald Trump says he will no longer deal with Britain's ambassador to Washington after the envoy disparaged him as inept, insecure, and incompetent, and his administration as uniquely dysfunctional. And on Tuesday, Trump lashed out at, quote, foolish British Prime Minister Theresa May and her, quote, wacky Washington ambassador, stepping up a tirade against the close ally. May has given her full support to Washington envoy Kim Darroch after a series of memos in which he described Trump's administration as dysfunctional and diplomatically clumsy and inept were leaked to a British newspaper Sunday. Meanwhile, British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt says they are trying to find the source of the leak of the diplomatic cables from Washington back to his homeland.
We need to find out how it happened, not least to give confidence to our teams all over the world that they can continue to give us their frank assessment. So that's why we're going to have a leak inquiry. I hope we get to the bottom of it. And of course, there'll be very serious consequences if and when we find out who's responsible.
London, long the U.S.'s closest ally, was embarrassed by the disclosure of the unflattering assessments of Trump made by its top envoy to Washington since 2016, but it did not deny their accuracy. The leaked cables were intended for senior British ministers and civil servants. Officials believe the leaker will be found among British politicians or officials and not the foreign government. Japan is seeing a boom for whale watching, with hordes of tourists making their way far north to see glimpses of the animals. But just 100 miles away, or 1,600 kilometers away, a stark and different scene. Whales are being hunted for their meat. Reuters' Grace Lee reports.
In Japan's far north, these tourists are out for a show. This area of Hokkaido has become a popular spot for whale watching, a business that's quickly growing across Japan. The past two decades, the number of whale watchers in the country has more than doubled, and the prospect of seeing whales up close is a tourism lifeline for the small town of Raosu. But whales aren't just for watching in Hokkaido anymore. Just 100 miles south on the same afternoon, boats were setting off on Japan's first commercial whale hunt in 31 years. Two whales were killed that day and hauled back to Kushiro City, including this 5.6-ton mink whale. It's a species that Raosu's tourists watch out for. Japan's decision to resume whaling this month drew condemnation worldwide. The move was announced in December after years of campaigns by supporters. The government maintains that whale meat is important in Japan's food culture.
The resumption of commercial whaling has been the strong wish of not only the people of Kushiro, but all those in the Japanese whaling industry.
But in all, whaling is a tiny industry in Japan. Only about 300 people are directly linked to it, and whale makes up about 0.1% of all meat eaten in a year. The business of watching whales might be far bigger, and tourists are worried for the animal's future.
The world's against Japan's whaling, and this is the only spot where we can see the whales from up close. I hope they reconsider their decision.
Whale hunting was never big in Raosu itself. Hotels and restaurants even avoid serving it, for good reason, according to Captain Masato Hasegawa.
We get a lot of kids coming here for their summer holidays. If you tell them on the boat that this is the whale we ate last night, they'd cry.
Demand for whale meat has been stagnant for more than a decade, and even within the industry, there aren't expectations that demand or profits will rise soon. On the other hand, Hasegawa says he's ordered a second boat. He's got a long list of customers hoping to see whales rather than eat them.
And that was Reuters reporter Grace Lee. And finally, Volkswagen is halting production of the last version of its iconic Beetle model this week at its plant in Puebla, Mexico. It's the end of the road for the vehicle that has symbolized many things over a history spanning eight decades since 1938. And that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, engineer Thomas Blanet, and managing editor, Paul Alexander, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow The Voice of America on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, with our VOA mobile app, you can download the stories and take them anywhere with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.